and welcome to the Libby's Podcast, conversations with authors who've been shortlisted for the British Book Awards, lovingly known as the Nibbies. I'm your host and longtime Nibbies fan, Hannah McInnes. These awards celebrate books and everyone who makes them, honouring the entire creative, collaborative journey of a book, from the author's mind to the reader's hand. And that's what we're going to do on this podcast. Chat to some of today's best-loved authors about their books, their writing, what's gone on behind the scenes to get them to where they are, and those lovely moments when they and the books they've created have found their readers.
I'm A.F. Stedman. I'm the author of the Skandar series, and in particular, Skandar and the Phantom Rider, which is about bloodthirsty unicorns.
I understand that you worked in law, it says in your bio, until you realised, shock, there wasn't enough magic involved. So I just want to know, when did you decide that? And when did you decide this was what you wanted to do, to devote yourself to magic and fantasy and conjuring up these lands for yourself and for the children who you write for?
I do feel a bit bad about that line, not enough magic involved. It wasn't that I didn't enjoy it, but I wanted to be an author from a very young age, I think, as soon as I knew authors were a thing. And I had written kind of as I was growing up, as a teenager, really written a lot. But then I kind of tried to be sensible. I'm a very kind of practical, sensible child. And I was sort of steered away from it. So it was always something in my mind. And then eventually I just thought, I'm never going to have time. I'm never going to have time to write this book that I want to write if I don't commit to it, basically.
And this book was a very specific idea, which you then wrote, or was it just a book?
I think at first it was a book, but then I had the idea for Skandar in about 2014, I think. So quite a long time ago now.
Yeah.
Had that kind of first image of this boy riding this unicorn that looked a little bit less fluffy than usual. That stayed in my mind for so long, even while I was a lawyer. And that was the one that I just wanted to sit down and write, and kind of the image I came back to when I was dreaming about being an author.
So where did that first come from, do you think, that idea, that concept?
I don't know. You know, I think I tell children this, that I actually really didn't like unicorns very much, which I think some of them can relate to, you know, the kind of rainbow, cuddly, cute unicorns. I just didn't understand, like, how have they become like this? Because, you know, throughout history, they've had all these different kinds of images. You know, they've been around for thousands of years in kind of the human consciousness. And they didn't start off fluffy. You know, they used to be a bit more ferocious. And I thought, what has happened to make them like this? So I think it was a kind of frustration with that one image of unicorns. And, you know, I think I wanted a creature that children could imagine themselves bonding with as well.
Mm. You've done it then, but could you just further set the scene on the series for those who haven't yet travelled there?
Of course. So Skandar is 13 years old and he desperately wants to be a unicorn rider because his world looks like ours, but with one major difference, that unicorns are real and deadly and they live on an island off the UK. And he wants to learn elemental magic, but he ends up failing the exam to become a unicorn rider. And so he goes on a different adventure from other people, and he finds out lots about his past and has lots of adventures on the way.
Perfectly summed up. So with this concept, I just wonder what it is that you want to bring to children. I know you're passionate about children and children reading and what it can do for them, but tell us in your words what you feel that power is, that magic that happens there, not just in your world.
Yeah, I think the most important thing for me when I'm writing is thinking about children reading for pleasure and forgetting that they're reading, almost being swept away in a world where they're just wanting to turn the pages to find out what happens next. And I think if you can try to give children a book that they love that much, kind of at this age, at the sort of 8 to 12 age, then it can mean that they feel more confident reading other books. I think with Skandar, that's happened a lot. They've tried the first one, they've been reeled in by the kind of bloodthirsty unicorns, and then they've gone on to read other things. And for me, as a children's author, when a child says to me, you know, I read Skandar, then I've read 20 other books this month, you know, that I want that. That's what I want. That's kind of the perfect thing to happen for me.
What about that balance then between giving them an escape and education of sorts and learning lessons. How do you get that right?
Yeah, I think children know when they're being patronised. Right. They know when you're trying to teach them a lesson. And so I think I really try in my books to draw on experiences they are having. Obviously, they don't have bloodthirsty unicorns, but they do experience things like their parents getting divorced. They do experience things like their parents maybe struggling with their mental health, grief and kind of friendship. And kind of on the lighter side, they might struggle with where they fit kind of in their friendship group. And as their friends grow up, because the characters in this series grow up, and those kind of challenges my characters face, I like to put in things that I know the children that I meet are facing as well. And I think that way they don't feel like you're telling them how to live their lives, but they think, oh, my favourite character was really struggling with this, and I am too. And so it gives them maybe an idea that they're not alone. And I think in that way, you don't have to teach them, you just have to kind of show them, and with these characters that hopefully they fall in love with.
What's it like writing characters that are growing up, writing series? There must be an immense challenge there.
I think I really loved them as a child, and so I had no idea it was going to be a series when I wrote the first one. You know, I wanted it to be, but I didn't know if anyone would let me. It is a challenge. I think it's that balance of knowing that a seven-year-old might pick up Skander and the Unicorn Thief, and when all of them are out, they're going to read them all. Because that's what they do when they love a series. They just bomb all the way through them. And kind of that balancing the children that are growing up with it with those kind of younger readers, and making sure there's layers, you know. And I put layers in it for adults as well, you know. And because a lot of these work well as a read aloud. And so you kind of want a little giggle for the parents sometimes. And like just the complexity of the mythology is, it's understandable to a seven-year-old, but it's also, you know, exciting for a teenager, and like hopefully the adults reading it get something too.
Yeah, that really is the art, isn't it, of children's literature, that there's something in there for the adults. There's always a sort of small humour that you'll pick up as an adult reading it to your children, and they'll get all the enjoyment without having picked up on the small parts.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they're going to enjoy the flaming farts, and you might not enjoy that as much, but you'll enjoy your child laughing at it. So so that's what I try to do.
Was there something that inspired you when you talk about gobbling up series? Were you inspired by something that you had read?
Yeah, I mean, I used to borrow books from the library every week. I think I had an adult library card, so I could take out more books. The librarians, you know, had pity for me. And so I was reading kind of like 10, 11 books a week. Like I was reading a lot. And it was fantasy books. I think one of the kind of foundational series for me is the Earthsea series by Ursula Le Guin. Mm. I think it's the first thing I read where it just blew my mind, the scope of the imagination, the scope of the world. It also has dragons in it and, you know, islands and magic. But I just kind of, I couldn't believe it wasn't real. And I was old enough to know it wasn't, but I thought I would love to be able to write something where people think, just like before they're going to sleep, they think, but maybe it is real though. And I think I tried to play on that in the Skander series a lot. And I have had very young children asking me if the island is a real place in the school event. And I didn't have the heart to tell them it wasn't. I just said, oh, maybe.
That must be lovely. I mean, you have interacted so much with your readers, and you have so much success and such a committed fandom, don't you? What do you think you've tapped into specifically? Because you said you didn't know a few questions ago whether anyone would read it. Okay, well, they absolutely have. So what do you think it is? Where do you take them? Why do they connect so deeply with it?
I mean, I think I try to make it so that children can see themselves in the books, because children like to learn about themselves, because they're learning about themselves all the time. And, you know, I try to make sure that the characters are diverse in all kinds of ways, that they have different coloured skin and they are from different socioeconomic backgrounds. And, you know, I have a disability, and so that's important for me to represent that. And I think I've had kind of messages from parents with children who have type 1 diabetes like me saying, you know, they now believe they could do something. They could be a unicorn rider. And so I think that that I've tried to put that in the whole book, and children often say to me when I meet them, I just felt like I could be friends with these people. I just felt like it was a place for me to be safe, to escape, you know, whether it's exams or something really stressful that's happening with their kind of home life, it's somewhere they can go and they feel like they belong there. And I think when they all get together and they come to my signings and things and they're all in the line chatting to each other, they kind of meet other people, and that community is kind of starting to happen. And it's like such a privilege to be able to, you know, do the events and get to see that. So I'm very grateful to my publishers for setting that up.
Yeah, it's the power of the unlikely hero, isn't it? It's an enormously powerful thing. Talking about those signs and signings and the cues, just tell me, though, before we talk about that and the interaction, because it is magical. I know you've said it's just magical meeting them all. But how do you find, personally, being swept up in such a storm of success, really? Was it difficult at the beginning, or all just pure dream come true scenario?
I mean, I think it helped that I'd had a job that I didn't love before. And I always kind of wanted to be an author, but I never really believed it was going to happen. And so I think when it did happen, I was so kind of grateful to be there, and I still feel incredibly grateful to even, I mean, I can't believe I'm doing this interview. I still feel like that. And I think, and I have friends who are kind of earlier on in their journey, you know, with their publishing journey and things. And one of my friends just got a book deal, and I thought, yeah, this is an amazing thing. And I it was scary at the start. I think it was scary before Scandal and The Unicorn Thief came out, because there was so much hype around it after it sold. And I thought, oh no, you know, no, it's not real. It's not really that good. You know, what if it comes out and everyone hates it? What if no children like it? And, you know, that happens every time. Mm-hmm. You know, you have those doubts because you're all on your own until you go out and meet people and see the children. And I always say to authors who are starting out, who are debuts, I say, wait till you meet the children. When you meet them, you won't feel so nervous anymore. You won't worry about the Goodreads reviews, and, you know, you won't worry about any of that, because you'll meet them and you'll think, oh yeah, this is why I did it.
Well, when you talk about hype and worry and when it comes out, the nerves, did they subside after the great success of the first one? Or does it only get worse, the kind of second book challenge, you know, oh, I've got to live up to the success of that? Or did you feel more confidence and less kind of imposter syndrome that you describe?
I think luckily I had written Scandal and The Phantom Rider before the first one came out. I actually wrote it in a lockdown still in 2020. Which was horrible in its way, but also meant that I didn't get that kind of horrible, it's already come out and is it good enough? I think I was most worried about people coming back for the second book. You know, you're always worried about that with children and series, because there can be quite a big drop off between books one and two. So yeah, when we kind of realised that, you know, people had come back, that was a big weight off my mind, because you want to believe that they loved it, but children love things all the time, and they tell you that it's their favourite book, and they'll say another book the next day, and you think, are you going to remember a year later, are you going to remember that you loved that book? And they did. So yeah, that was a nerve-wracking moment.
And they did. And you went on a 6-week international author tour. I've read somewhere one of the hardest working authors in the industry by doing that. And that is a solid 6 weeks. Why is that so important to you? Because it must be, or perhaps it isn't, as wonderful as it is exhausting, or as exhausting as it is wonderful.
It is really tiring. I was very tired. Last year when I went to the Nibbies, I'd landed from the US and then I went to Australia the next day. So it was really tiring. But I think that I just kind of forget when I'm doing the events. It gives you so much energy, because you get so much energy from the children. And it was just amazing to go kind of to these places so far from where I grew up, and where Scandal's from, and you meet children who love the series. I mean, it was just, it's absolutely mind-blowing, and it kind of gives you that energy to keep going. Definitely kind of, you know, had moments when I was like, I'm really tired. But it's kind of, every day brought more people wanting to hear about me speaking about the books. And I think, whenever I do an event, I think if one child goes away from this and they read a book they wouldn't have read before, it was worth it. Even if I had to fly thousands of miles, then it is worth it, because like, my job here is done. That is my job. And it makes a difference to see them. Mm. It makes a difference to them because they think this is a real person, and it brings the book to life, particularly for reluctant readers, because yeah. a book on a shelf is quite intimidating. But someone saying, hey, this is what it's about, is not. So,
do you have particularly fond memories or memorable interactions with some of the children at events that stand out?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ones who, or that when they pick up on something that you weren't expecting from the books, you know, there have been some who have made these sandwiches that are in the books, which are Marmite, cheese and jam all together, which I think I made when I was about 9. And I had someone, one boy say to me, you know, he has panic attacks like one of the characters who makes these sandwiches. She's very confident, but she kind of makes them as a crutch. And he said, you know, when he's having a bad day and he doesn't want to go to school, he makes a sandwich. And you just think, That's wild. But it's actually helped him through his day. And that's kind of like amazing and not something I would have expected.
And any other interactions? I love hearing about them. I think it's because children are so brilliantly uncensored and their reactions are so raw and so real.
Yeah.
And so it's so interesting hearing about the kind of things they say, because they really probably... Their eyes are so open wide, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think I particularly love hearing from children who say, you know, I didn't really like books before. Mm. Like one boy said to me recently, like, this is the first book I've ever bought. And you think, this is the first book you've ever had in your house. And, you know, he wanted it enough that he kind of persuaded his mum to buy it for him. And then he's waiting for his birthday to get the next one. And I kind of think that those are often the most memorable, because they're coming at reading from, they don't have any context. And so they're talking to you about it and saying, you know, this happened. And, you know, you think there's so much for you to discover now. Yeah. That's so exciting. I also love it when they draw a lot. So I think because it's quite visual, I get a lot of... children like drawing me really amazing pictures and making me things and like giving them to me at events.
I love that. It is very visual. I was going to ask you, I read some of the lengths you went to have these extraordinary covers for Waterston's, a signed edition with sprayed edges, foiled water element case with exclusive extra material, and you know, the cover itself is absolutely standout, beautiful. How much of a role do you have in that? How much of a collaboration is that?
I think I've had quite a big role as authors go, I think. For the second one, for Skandar and the Phantom Rider, it actually arrived looking like that. And I just went, that's amazing. And we've got such an incredible design team at Simon & Schuster. And Two Dots, who do the covers, are amazing. And I think one of the things that I kind of was really, I wanted it to have the elements as kind of very fundamental. And so once we established what the fire symbol looked like and the water symbol, and then I always want them to kind of look similar, because they're almost collectible, and I think that appeals to children. And they love kind of looking at the symbols and guessing which one was going to come next before we told them it was the yellow one. So I think they got the vision, Simon & Schuster, from me, and they knew that it needed to be epic and also have that kind of crossover appeal for slightly older children. So I think it's been amazing to work with them. And the map as well in the inside is just that. It's just such an amazing experience seeing that whenever, because they're different in every book.
I mean, that is the publishing journey, that experience, isn't it, of the cover? And we've talked about that nervousness when you're all by yourself. We might come back to that a little bit, because I'm intrigued about how that works. And we've obviously talked about the magic that happens when the book is in the hands of the readers and you're meeting them. But was there anything else in that journey, publishing journey, as it were, that surprised you or stood out or was particularly an enjoyable element to it?
Well, I think you never know how you're going to feel being edited. You never really know that, because you're all on your own writing this book, doing whatever you like. And I thought, I wonder how I'm going to feel about this, because I mean, I'm quite a relaxed person, but I didn't know how I was going to feel with someone kind of saying, oh, could you change this? Or I'm not sure that's working. And I have absolutely loved being edited. You know, I kind of look forward to it. And I would be lost without them. My UK editor and my US editors, they jointly edit, which is amazing.
Really?
And they just, they've made them so much better. You know, it's when some of the most kind of creative things happen, because it's making me focus on it, the lines, the dialogue, the funny things that I put in, it just makes... It makes it feel like finished, I guess.
It's fascinating. I'm learning a lot about the unbelievably important relationship then between an author and an editor.
Yeah.
Delving into these books and these interviews for this series. And really, really interesting. Just before I let you go, tell me a little bit more about your writing, your technique. You said you're all on your own. I know that you're meeting a deadline now for the next book, but what weird and wonderful habits do you have in your writing? Do you have to use a certain room, be dressed in a certain way?
I am a creature of habit. I think I like to write kind of... I try to write in a normal working day, although I think left to my own devices, I'd probably write at night.
Really?
Because I like it. I try to write sort of 9 till 6, and sometimes I kind of bribe myself with chocolate, which is always fun. One Malteser per word. But I also do
this. Quite a lot of Maltesers.
It is.
But why not
the whole book? Just when I really need to finish. But I think one of the things that I do, which is sort of unusual, is I like to keep the kind of pace like very quick in the books, and so when it gets to a later stage, I cut words per page. So I work out how many words I need to cut per page, and It can be anywhere between like 30 and 50 words, which is quite a lot.
That's tough. That must be the toughest part.
Yeah, it's
surely
a horrible, horrible thing to do, but I've done it on every book, and I'm currently doing it for the fourth one. And so I have to do it for all of them now. But I do think that immediacy and like having anything in there that is kind of like not kind of necessary for the story, or I don't absolutely love, it's gone.
Mm. It really interests me how many authors say something similar to you and what you've just said about the fact that you treat it like a 9 to 5. I mean, whatever their hours are, a lot of people say, and it always surprises me, that idea generation and the creative process is not about wandering around waiting for the ideas to come. It's about sitting yourself in front of a blank page and sort of forcing them, which is sort of at odds with the idea of ideas. But is that your experience then?
Yeah, I think so. I know that some people experience writer's block, but I've not experienced it. I've kind of had tough days, but I just think you've got to sit in the chair.
Yeah.
Like, I've got to be there. And you might write something terrible, but if you're not doing it, it's hard. I do think going for walks and listening to music and doing other things really helps. And I sometimes have my best ideas when I'm having a break. But, in terms of the actual writing and the actual kind of like day to day, you've just got to be there.
Mm. Do you actually speak to and get to know your characters in a slightly intense way?
I don't really do that. I think that sometimes because... I'm so visual when I write. I sort of have a little film playing in my head. And so I kind of, if a scene isn't working, it's often because I can't see it. And so sometimes I like to, play with what dialogue they're doing as if I'm kind of directing them in a film.
Oh, it's like you set me up for the question that's sitting there in front of me, which is whether you envisage it actually coming to a screen when you write and hope for that.
Yeah, well, so Sony Pictures bought the film rights in 2020. And I've seen the script, which is really, really an odd experience, but it's a really great script. And so now, they would love, I think, to make multiple films. And so when I am writing, I am thinking about that, not massively so, because I think the books for me are the most important. But, I sometimes when I'm writing a big battle scene, I think, oh, this would be really good to watch in the cinema.
Will you be able to relinquish control, though? You'll have to put it into someone else's hands. That's the tricky part.
It's hard. I think actually when I read the script, there are a few things in there that I said to John Croker, the screenwriter, I was like, can I steal this? Can I have it for the next one? So it works both ways, So I think I don't find it too hard because it is at the moment, because it's such a kind of collaborative process. Mm. But I'm sure there will be challenges in the future.
OK, my final question is, what does it mean to be nominated for a Nibby for you?
I mean, it's just a dream for me. I've been nominated 2 years in a row now, which I thought was impossible. I didn't even think that was a thing. I was so shocked when Simon and Schuster told me. But I love the British Book Awards because it's about the whole making of the book. You know, I always say a book is not just by the author. You know, it takes so many people to make it and make it a success. And the fact that we're all in that room and we're all celebrating together, it's so joyful. So I'm so grateful to be nominated, and I'm very excited for the night.
Well, that is a pretty perfect place, I think, to end. Thank you so much.
No, thank you.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, make sure to subscribe to the series to hear more conversations with Nibby's authors. And we'd love it if you'd rate it and leave us a review. Do visit thebookseller.com/British-book-awards to find out more about the industry's biggest celebration of books and all who make them. This podcast was produced by Heavy Entertainment.